Yeah, so I pick the economy, and you get other people take the help.
So you manage find space. If you weren't given this stuff of these three platforms,
yeah,
just people that are still managing the number of others, yeah, you would have seen.
Yeah, exactly. But in this, how it is
Thank you. Till 2 o'clock this morning, and now I'm not awake.
Good morning, everyone. Let's make sure the relevant stakeholders are all here and those participating, all members appear to be here. Right. Now, we were just at that point in our engagement with the DTI and also having got the opinion, the legal opinion, and also the interpretation thereof from the advocate Van der Merwe for us to engage effectively. Some of you had already asked some questions. Do you recall that at the beginning? Some of you had already made statements. So, and I noticed just in the break there that Ms. Naidu, the liaison officer for DTI, parliamentary liaison, is here. Thank you. So let's see by show of hands, and what I would like, so that everyone gets a bite at it, let the first two speakers not go and take three questions, four questions each. because then it becomes not a very effective committee engagement. So whoever is first, can they take that into account? And I see from the last engagement, people were inclined to take 3 to 4 minutes. Let's leave it there. Yeah. Honourable Hadebi, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable... Right, at this particular point in time. So we're engaging on both, on everything we have heard so far, plus what we have received by way of the legal opinion from a senior counsel, Wim Trengrove.
Chairperson, it is more like a comment than a question, because I think that the reports from both the DDG and the advocate were very clear and succinct, in fact, providing a clear direction thereof. But I think that when coming to the issue of the opinion of Advocate Trengrove, it's very important that the big thing out of that, Chair, is that he said the bill is constitutional. I think that the portfolio committee must pat itself on the back for doing such a wonderful job. So, but what is also very important out of that is that we cannot also disregard the opinions of the various stakeholders which made an input. Because when we call for public submissions, Chair, we are not window dressing. We really have to get to the core of the opinion of the people who are affected by the bill. Our constitution demands that. So I think that there are strong opinions around the issue of the powers of the minister. Although sometimes at a personal level, you see that when you look at the Disaster Act, the minister is given powers, but through the law, through the act itself. But if those powers are supposed to be given the Minister of Trade and Industry, I think that there's skepticism around that. I think that, Chair, must also be taken into consideration. Why were they comfortable with the Disaster Management Act and they're not comfortable with that? But we cannot dismiss their opinion. That one is very important. So what is critical here, Chair, is that if they feel that clause 29 is going to provide too much power to the minister, I think that we have to consider that thoroughly. If necessary, sometimes we have to climb down. Although I know that my colleague, Honorable Williams, has got very strong views around that. But you must remember, this month is Mandela month. We'll not be having this constitution if we didn't have a character like Madiba, who was at the helm of the ANC. The person was able to accommodate the opinion of his own adversaries for the sake of the country. So here, the big picture here, which we want, is what do we want? We want to protect the most vulnerable, because those people who are over-indebted, Chair, is like the people who have been given a red card not to participate in the economy of the country. I think that one, on its own, we must take it very seriously, that we must provide for that. But if this provision of providing the minister in section with those powers are going to create a problem, I'll appeal to my colleagues, to everyone, that let's consider what the stakeholders have said. If necessary, we can climb down and say, let's delete this thing, let's delete that clause out, so that this thing can be passed, so that everyone must know that in South Africa, we give and take. It's not the better of a big man type of a democracy. The issue, even the smallest man will be listened to. So I think that on these two issues, Chair, one, the issue of the big thing is that this bill is constitutional. So if it is constitutional, let's ensure that as speedily as possible, we are able to provide and defend the most vulnerable people. But if that issue of Clause 29 is going to give a problem, Chairperson, we can climb down for the sake of these people so that we ensure that everyone is covered and then this thing is not contested at the other levels. But we do that, taking into clear cognizance that we are doing it for the sake of the most vulnerable people, so that as quickly as possible, they are able to be covered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Whip, Honourable Khadebe, Honourable MacPherson.
Thanks. Just to help the Honourable Khadebe, Senior Counsel Trengrove did not say that the bill was constitutional. That wasn't his task. His task was to see whether the specific clauses of the bill was constitutional. So he was not asked for an opinion on the whole bill. But to the DTI's presentation, my initial view, Ms. Masorcha, and I'm sorry to be as blunt as this, but I feel that this document is rather superficial, and I don't think that it adequately captures the very intense details and responses as found in the public submissions. But what I would have hoped for is actually, Chairs, an opportunity to engage with those people that have made submissions and to be able to ask them questions and to be able to hear from them. And I think that they... Can I carry on? Yeah, thanks. And I think that, and I would still think and hope that they are given an opportunity to be able to come and present these opinions and views to us. With respect to Clause 12B, I think that there are contractual issues that exist. I don't think that one can simply sort of draw up guidelines and hope for the best. And you've included mortgages in restructuring, and I'm curious as to how that has crept into your responses. And you've sort of said that the unintended consequences can be mitigated. Well, the problem is that when you develop legislation, you should work out what the worst case scenario is and work backwards from that. We shouldn't wait and hope for things not to take place. With regards to the funding of financial literacy, I just want to say that that the advocate used the phrase that the bill sets the scene for this particular point. Now, if financial literacy by the bill is made mandatory, and if there is no funding for it, or a money bill is required, or there are a program that needs to be developed, in that space right after the bill has been enacted, if it is indeed enacted, a person will never be able to fulfill that requirement until such time as the funding is made available. And what if the funding is not made available? What if the Minister of Finance says there is just no money? What then, advocate? What then if the Ministry of Finance turns around and says we cannot fulfill this because there is no money to do so? How can a person get through that particular point? With respect to the Minister's 29B, I'm dead set against this, and I do believe from the Honourable Khadebe that there sounds to be some ability to speak about this issue further, and I certainly welcome that. But I want to turn to specifically one of the submissions that I thought to be quite fair and balanced, and that was the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa. And it's a real pity, Chair, that I cannot engage them on their submissions that they've made to this committee. So I would really ask that the committee give real thought to giving us an opportunity to engage and speak to these issues, because I think some of the very pertinent issues that they raise in their submissions deserve an engagement between us. And then to turn to the last point made by Ms. Masocha, and that is whether the bill, whether it is advisable that the the committee considers publishing the revised bill. Now, what we've dealt with as in up to draft, is it six or seven that we're in at the moment, the bill has changed, in my view, quite substantially from when it was first put on the table. And while people have been given an opportunity to engage throughout the process, and they've been opportunity to engage specifically on these last three clauses, I think that the bill needs to be engaged in its entirety. And what does that mean for consumers? What does that mean for credit providers? How does the impact study, which we don't have, speak to the bill? And until such time as that happens, Chair, it's very, very difficult to actually, you know, I think, chart a way forward. And so from you as the chairperson of the committee, I would like to ask the following questions. Will the people who have made submissions be able to come and answer questions with respect to their submissions? Will you support a publishing of the final bill in its entirety? And three, when will we be able to get the impact assessment that this committee agreed to? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson. We do have others on scheduled here. There was the Honourable Williams. I've just now seen a hand of the Honourable Kacharia. Is there anyone else? Right. Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm of the opinion that we've had many, many and ample engagements with everybody with regard to this bill. When I was chairing the subcommittee, we often invited people to come and engage with us. And so I would say that if we continue to start looking at speaking to everybody, in my opinion, this is just a stalling tactic. In other words, then we're at the point of passing this legislation so that we can alleviate the over-indebted burden that our South African people have to suffer. And now we're getting these, we have to go back and talk to people again. There has been so many engagements and so many times. The reason why the bill looks so different than it did in the beginning was because we took into account the public hearings, the inputs. In fact, if you go through the inputs and then look at the changes to the legislation, you could almost say that this bill has been made up maybe 50 or 60% by the inputs from the people. And so I don't think that we need to go back and now engage with everybody asking questions. I'd also like to say that it is not up to the chairperson to just decide by herself whether or not she is now the dictator in charge of this committee. I mean, she's here to chair us as members, and then we collectively make decisions. The chairperson can't just make inputs. So with regard to the minister's powers, I'm still of the opinion that we should keep that in place. However, I am on the opinion that if that is the stumbling block to this bill being constitutional, then I would withdraw that position. Thank you.
Hear you correctly. Not too sure. Right. We will take your hand after Honourable Kachalia, Honourable Tierko. Honourable Mantash, yes, correcting me, but I got such an unusual statement from the Honourable Williams that I'm not sure I was wide awake. But did I hear you say you are prepared to withdraw your reservations?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, that is correct.
Very adamant,
I said, Chairperson, that I'm of the opinion that that clause should stay in place, the Minister's powers. However, if it is the stumbling block where we stop and have to go to Constitutional Court over this, I'm prepared to obviously withdraw this. And it seems that that is the opinion that it will end up in Constitutional Court. So I will withdraw the Minister, those powers. Yeah, thank you.
Well, you've shown today your capacity to be very reasonable. Thank you. Honourable Kacharia.
Thank you, Chair. I want to make a few comments based on, firstly, Honourable Radebe's comment, and secondly, to follow on the comments that the Honourable Williams made. I don't want to flog a dead horse, but we received here a 23-page PowerPoint presentation that is dense in terms of each page on the Advocate Trengrove's opinion. Advocate Trengrove's opinion is 15 pages long. I'm sure that everyone on this committee would have read it thoroughly. It makes compelling and disturbing reading. In response to the Honourable Radebe, let me just read briefly his conclusion. He says, "I conclude that the debt forgiveness mechanism satisfies the requirements of Section 25(1) of the Constitution." In the preamble above it, he says, the formulation needs to be carefully reviewed. The complexity, patchwork, and not user-friendly nature of it needs to be addressed, and the fact that it is vulnerable to constitutional attack in terms of the power being conferred on the minister to introduce new debt intervention measures constitutes an unconstitutional delegation of power. Now, those words aren't minced. They are there in black and white, and they're absolutely clear. They send a shiver through my spine in terms of saying yes to certain aspects of legislation or to assent to certain aspects of legislation when this sort of input that we sought from an esteemed source comes before us. Now, also, in all of these 23 pages, there was no particular reference how do economic circumstances constitute an unexpected or unpredictable event? What qualifies as an unexpected or unpredictable event affecting the national economy? They're very pertinent questions raised there, which if one read carefully, is extremely worrying. Now, I think we need to take very careful consideration of this. And then the question when I hear rejections of the view that there should be further review, comments, stakeholder involvement, and a publishing of the revised bill, I get worried, because I think that in its present form, it is something that I would have considerable difficulty with. I'm encouraged by the Honourable Williams's last intervention, where he says that he would be prepared to withdraw, because that makes sense. I would urge him and the members of this committee to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kachalia. Thank you. But we do have one or two other members here. Is it yourself, Honourable Mantash?
Thank you, Chairperson, for affording me this opportunity. Chairperson? Sorry, I was disturbed.
You are on the floor.
We from the ANC, Chairperson, draw comfort from what the Professor Trengrove is saying on page 3 of the document that the Dr. Advocate Fando Marve was reading. Yes. The very first bullet, confirming that this relief is not unconstitutional. We find comfort in that, and that the essence of the bill makes sense to him. But also, Chairperson, I want to align myself to what Honourable Williams is saying, that we are prepared to accommodate other parties on their concern that we must limit the powers of the minister. We reiterate that, Chairperson, because our objective is to relieve the burden on the shoulders of the poor, over-indebted South Africans. We would plead with our learned friends to reconsider and allow us not to re-advertise or re-gazette anything, because this is not making any of their lives better, which is our main goal, Chairperson. I think I must stop the chair.
I think the substance of what you wish to say is captured. And have we heard and accommodated everyone on this so far? But perhaps members may not be aware, because they haven't really had a chance to study the revised program. We're not adopting the bill today by any stretch of the imagination. What we were looking at is we asked for a legal opinion on certain issues. Issues that were raised and referred to as possibly unconstitutional or whatever, and members of the opposition raising repeatedly, along with a number of members of the public, the issue about, I mean, should the minister be having the right to sort of just prescribe this, change this? Perhaps that should be Parliament's preserve, and so on. So we then referred this, that was our agreement, to a constitutional expert. And no, we didn't send the whole bill there, because there was no need to do that. Our concern was the constitutionality. That was the issue. Not the policy. We would have differences of opinion there. And that came back to us very, very clear. We also were required, as you know, to advertise certain clauses, certain issues that had come up since we had begun the bill that had never been addressed. We had never taken that to the House. This is what we wanted to do. And we were obliged to do that, because the public were not aware that these other issues were going to be dealt with. And we gave them that specific opportunity. And many, if not most, of the respondents to what was published took the opportunity to go beyond the scope of what was required. It's very much like when we write an exam, going on your main point, because you know it so well and you're passionate about it, and you give 2 pages instead of 10 lines. It's a similar thing. There's nothing right or wrong about it. But we are obliged to stick and confine ourselves within the scope. However, if DTI in its comments want to identify certain things which in its belief as a department, you know what, this is very substantive. If we, as the committee, look at a few of the issues that have come up that we didn't ask for, very substantive, well, we can incorporate that. Yes, we can. But we constantly have to remind ourselves that this is a committee bill. It has a slightly different process, number one, to when the executive tables a bill. But the second thing about this bill, not all our bills get labelled as tabled as a section 76, as, you know. And that means when it goes there, you almost start the process from the beginning. You all know. And yes, some of us may sort of get annoyed or this or that, but quite rightly, it is not the second House of Parliament, as some of us in this House like to say. It is actually the first House of Parliament, the NCOP. Yes. Sometimes we need to be reminded of that. So So it's the bill, after we have dealt with it, in many ways you could argue we are the engine of Parliament, you know, but we're doing all this work now. But it's not, we're not, once we've finally come to a position, which I hope will be convergence, and this goes to the NCOP, it'll go through again. People will have that second bite, do you see? They will know more about it, and it'll be done in the provinces. And we all know exactly how that works, all of us. And then they may not agree with us. And we all know that. So I have no doubt that this is at least one of the pieces of legislation that no one can contend was railroaded. It's actually been on such a slow track, I'm not sure if we were going to China. But be that as it may, I have heard committee's points. I do want responses, but I do need to respond to yourself, Honourable Macpherson. You did direct a question at me, and the committee did respond before I could respond. However, the reality is, you are the committee, each and every individual member. I chair this committee and I do have certain powers, yes. One of those great powers is I have a casting vote, which I've only exercised once in 24 years. That's a great power. So with other things, I'm mindful of what members may say or not say, and I would ask and appeal to you, Honourable Macpherson, you of all people have made a singular contribution to this bill, and as chairperson I thank you. You, not only in the subcommittee, but right here, you and your colleague, but all of us. Having said that, we're only at the beginning of our consideration. And I'd like the comments then from yourselves, that is the advocate, certain things that you may wish to respond to, and also yourself, Dr. Masocha.
Thank you, Chair. I have noted the...
Just one moment. I'm mindful of that letter that was sent to me that we all must apply our minds. One moment. That Mr. Ayanda Sakupa, this is his last day of having been seconded to me. I understand he's going for, is it psychiatric help after your stint here? But, no, sorry, that's an aside. That is an aside. It's very difficult to be seconded at short notice with no handover. And to be thrust in there, he even lost weight running around. So I am sorry about the loss of your weight. But I think on behalf of the committee, we appreciate you at least attempting to keep the chair informed. Thank you. Okay. So, Tandiswa Makanda, my executive secretary proper, will be returning. So, my sanity. Yes, do go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. What I was saying was that we have noted the comments and contributions from the honourable members. And I would like to maybe speak to the concerns of Honourable Macpherson. In terms of the superficiality element that we did not go into much detail, we have produced a metrics document, it's in Word, where we went through the different comments that were made by stakeholders. They were very broad, most of them, unfortunately. So we zoomed into the specific clauses, but that document outlines how we responded to the relevant areas, but we did consider most of their comments, we did. And also in terms of the mortgages, I'm going to request Mr. Mashapa to speak to the issue of the mortgage. And regarding the consultation, we flagged that issue of the wider consultation because we saw it as talking broadly to the bill itself. But we were also saying it is the discretion of the committee to look into that, not as a recommendation from the department to say this is what must happen. But we wanted to highlight that to ensure that it is noted because it might have its own concerns. The unintended consequences that were raised, we picked them up from the comments on the clauses. In terms of the impact of the specific issues, we will not necessarily be responsible to talk to those, but we noted that there were concerns that these proposals would have unintended consequences, and we felt that we needed to speak to them because we think that this is going to be beneficial for our target group of consumers. And in fact, the unintended consequences or the intended consequence will be that our over-indebted consumers are finally represented more than they've ever been in the past. So I think that's why we thought that we should flag that, but just to highlight that the concerns the stakeholders had regarding that section was not necessarily going to be as negative as they have highlighted it, and we thought we should respond to that. But broadly, in our view, we have responded to most of the issues as per the advertised clauses, and we think that our responses were detailed. What we avoided, we did not go into, was to highlight specific stakeholders, but our metrics has highlighted them. But for the PowerPoint, we wanted to focus on the issues, not the individuals. That's why we didn't go into that kind of detail. Mr. Mashapa, if it's okay, if you can speak to the issue of the mortgages, please.
Thank you, DDG. Good afternoon, Chairperson.
We're all listening. Yes, good afternoon.
The main submission that we made on the powers that are given to the tribunal and the courts to reduce interest rates, the responses of the stakeholders was that we already have the task team agreement and the guidelines which were agreed with the NCR. In our response now, we're pointing out that those guidelines, the DCRS, they are not being widely used in the industry, only 18%. And the pushback that we have been getting is that 18% of credit providers, which means that it's a tiny portion of the credit market, is not giving the interest and fee concessions to over-indebted consumers. So we agree with the position that the committee is taking, that in order to help over-indebted consumers, there should be different interest and fee regimes for over-indebted consumers. Now, under the DCRS, we have the rules for restructuring. What you find is if, for example, the consumer has 5,000 rand available to repay, if all credit providers were to ask their contractual interest, the payment plan will not solve. What it means is no one will ever get their money because everybody is asking 15%, for example, which is their contractual interest. When we say that the interest, we need to develop rules, what we mean is debt cancellers or the NCR must never at all times, as they start, pitch the interest rates at zero. What they have to do is to work the interest rate from high, reducing it in accordance with the affordability of the consumer. Only in the instance where you cannot solve the payment plan without reducing the interest rate to zero, then what we'll recommend is 0%. And the rules also treat secured credit differently from personal loans, in that the interest rate on secured credit is never reduced to zero. Thank you.
I would just like you to clarify for us, perhaps other members of the committee are aware of this task team agreement. Who is the task team? It certainly isn't ourselves.
The task team agreement was entered into between the NCR and credit providers in 2008 to address the bottlenecks in debt counseling. We used to have thousands of debt counseling applications stuck in the magistrate's court because credit providers were opposing proposals and many payment plans were not solving because all credit providers were asking original contractual interest. And as a result, you, under that regime, you wouldn't have any payment plan solving. So then we came together, drafted the restructuring rules, and agreed with them to make concessions to reduce interest rates and fees for over-indebted consumers. And that started unlocking many applications in the court. And I think as early as 5 years ago, the majority of payment plans were now being submitted to the consumer tribunal because of the task team agreement. Because if you had 40% of credit providers that time agreeing to reduce interest rates, more consumers' plans were able to solve and they were able to be restructured quickly. But the percentage of the usage has declined substantially to 18% now.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Dr. Masocha.
Chair, through you, if Prof would like to say something in the CEO, if they can be allowed to maybe respond to some of the issues.
Thank you, Chair. There really is nothing to add from our side, Chair. Everything that the DDG has expressed, I think, covers all the angles that the trio had to deal with. And we don't feel there is anything right now overlooked or under covered in this entire submission. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor. There's just one thing one would try to appreciate and understand. You're saying that there has been this agreement, but unfortunately only 18%, 1/8, are currently implementing it, which is why you wish to see that included in the legislation per se. Right, thank you. Is there any further response from yourself, Dr. Masocha? Yes, sorry, CEO Motsagari.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. With regards to the task team rules, unless this is included in legislation, we will not get a lot of consumers, you know, being able to obtain relief. I must also just also point out that the courts normally reject, you know, these proposals where concessions have been agreed to between credit providers and consumers. And unless it's in the legislation, the courts will continue to reject these proposals. And they really do provide relief to consumers. That's all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief Executive Officer, National Credit Regulator. I'm just looking at the committee for the responses of Dr. Masocha, and I saw some concerns, perhaps not everything being addressed. It's two of you, the Honourable McPherson, the Honourable Williams. I did mention your name. Yes.
See what happens when you're not in committee for 2 months. thank you very much. I just want to really reiterate the point around being able to reduce interest rates to zero. And I found the point that I think actually makes a lot of sense to me in one of the submissions, where the submitter says that the proposed amendment may very well be unconstitutional, given that it results in vested contractual rights being compromised in circumstances where there is no fault on part of the credit provider. And I think that that is a well-made point. Now, the one thing that I've always said is sort of a concern for myself is, will these will this bill make credit more expensive, and will it ultimately withhold credit from from the lower end of the market? And my view in this particular point is that it actually does both of those, because interest is one of the key mechanisms for credit providers to make a profit. They're not in the business of giving out money as a charity organization. And when you start to unpick that main ability for them to make profit, they then have no desire to in fact make that product available. Now, there's a big difference obviously with reckless credit. People that have been given money recklessly can have that money extinguished immediately. That is provided for in the Act. But to I think take away a business's ability to make a profit through no fault of their own is a big, big problem for me, and I think may very well lead to the costs of credit increasing and credit being withheld. I haven't had my question answered, DDG, on how the mandatory literacy program can be met by a person who's applied for debt relief if there is no funding for such a program. So if the program doesn't exist after the bill is enacted, they will never be able to go through the debt relief program if that is mandatory. Can you tell me what discussions, preliminary discussions, have been had with Treasury? What is the estimated costs of the first year of literacy, and what are the operational costs for the NCR to deliver on that mandate? Then, Chair, I'd like to put two questions to the committee, and the Honourable Williams is correct. It's not your position to determine these things, but I would really like to put on the table formally that the committee considers allowing those that have made these submissions to interact with this committee. I certainly would like to have a formal interaction with them and ask them many questions that are encompassed in their submissions. So that would be the first thing that I'd put to the committee. The second thing that I'd put to the committee is the committee considers seriously that once the bill is in its final draft, and before we go to the line-by-line reading of the bill, that it is gazetted as certainly, I would say, not suggested, but encouraged by Ms. Masotra and the DTI, that we would give that serious consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. I will certainly put that to the committee after tomorrow's engagement. Right, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to talk about something that we haven't raised yet. It's in connection with everything. There was many submissions about the moral hazard, the unforeseen negative consequences of this act and this bill, etc. And I want to state that we recently came back from a study tour to the United Kingdom, and where they have used debt relief measures, they've legislated debt relief measures, and while we were engaging with them, and we didn't just engage with government, but we also engaged with the banks, we engaged with many different sectors of the British economy, and we repeatedly asked the question, has there been negative unforeseen consequences to their debt relief measures? Has there been a moral hazard to their debt relief measures? And has the price of credit gone up? And in every single answer we got was no, no, and no. So to sum up again, in countries where they have initiated a debt relief legislation, and in this particular case in the United Kingdom, there have been no reported unforeseen negative consequences. There has been no moral hazard. In other words, then people running out and getting more debt and then coming back and going into a bad cycle. And there has been no increase in the cost of credit. And this has happened in the United Kingdom. I'm not saying we're the same as the United Kingdom, but it is the example that we looked at. Thank you.
Indeed, and if you look at this, when I think they distributed that study report today, didn't they? The report, and that is so that we can study it again ourselves and add to it or whatever. But I think just to add in there, I think Honourable Williams, it was also Wales where they were expecting possible, you know, moral hazards, etc., and it didn't arise. Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Kadebe?
Chairperson, I think that we have moved a lot on this issue. But what I want to highlight, Chairperson, is that just in response to what Honourable McPherson has said, the issue of dealing with the interest and lowering it, we are prejudicing the credit providers. Chairperson, I think that if we go back to our constituencies, we know that there are people who have committed suicide because of over-indebtedness. It's a fact. It has happened. It has happened. So the issue is that whose interest are we serving here as a parliament of the people? Do we push the people to such a way that they have to commit suicide to show that they are in distress? Again, what's the use of having an interest whereby you are not going to receive anything at the end of the day? It's just like expecting blood from the stone. So, but the moral of what I want to raise here, Chair, is that, as I said initially, that Madiba used the process of give and take. I think that even the credit providers here, they must also come to the party, because it is the interest of the country that as many people as possible are participating in the economy of the country. So when the people are over indebted, they are basically given a red card. They cannot go and do those things. So I really appeal, Chair, that it must be the issue of give and take in dealing with this thing.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kadebe. Honourable McPherson.
Sorry, Chair. Just before I pass, she reminds me that I indicated the NCOOP process is also going to start afresh. Once this bill is referred to them, those guys can go and engage with the members in the NCOP. We cannot stall this bill here in the NA. Let's deal with it, pass it, and then the engagement part can still be done on the other side. When it goes to the NCOP, it also goes to the provinces. So it means that it's going to be spread out throughout the whole country again. Thank you, Chair.
Very much, Honourable Kadebe. Honourable McPherson, sorry about that.
You know, the Honourable Kadebe makes a really great point about give and take. And I think that that's a critical fundamental that has been a part of this bill from the beginning. And I really do think that if nothing that I take out of this, personally speaking, is the manner in which I think that parties have engaged each other in the bill. And I think that that has been a really fantastic opportunity and I think is a real example to hopefully other committees as to how parties engage with one another and how private stakeholders also engage with this committee. Because at the end of the day, what we don't want to do, Chairperson and Honourable Kadebe, is restrict the credit market to the point that the very constituents that you are talking about, the only way for them to access credit is through the Mashonisas, where there is no control and no regulation. So we can't say to ourselves that, you know, we're prepared to collapse the formal credit market only for the informal credit market to become the new source of lending. So that's why it has to be a give and take. We have to be able to protect, at the end of the day, a credit provider's ability to make profit responsibly. Because, I mean, I don't think that there's anyone that doesn't want to see that. And actually, already in legislation, the ability exists for someone who is over indebted to find relief. They can have the agreement extended. They can reduce the amount paid each month. They can postpone dates for payments. So there are a number of mechanisms that exist. Are they perfect? Absolutely not. Do we need to make debt counseling and the ability to solve easier and more accessible to lower income people? Of course. But the one way to not solve the problem is to kill and throttle the formal credit market, because that will only see the rise of the unregulated illegal credit market, which, to the DTI's own admission, is unable to actually really do anything about at the moment. And sadly, this bill still doesn't speak to that part of the informal economy. So I think that is there willingness on everyone's behalf to give and take? Absolutely. Do we need to look at this and how we strengthen the formal sector and deal with the informal sector that protects consumers? I'm all for that.
Thank you, Honourable Macpherson. I think, look, all of us have in the room have had the opportunity to engage, some more than others, but everyone has participated in this discussion. From the DDG side, I think Dr. Masocha, we can now hand over to Advocate van der Merwe, who will be responding to issues that you've asked her to address.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first thing that I would like to talk to, I made a statement that I actually think is maybe was very unfair to myself, actually. The first two opinions that were given to this committee from National Treasury and DTI on the prescribed regulations, both of those opinions, and quickly in the tea break, I went to reread just the pertinent portions to make sure that what I'm saying now is correct. The concern of those opinions were that the powers that were given to the minister were too broad. And in fact, the current draft reflects the proposals made by both those opinions. So in fact, there are two senior counsels that agree with me that the current prescribed measures would be constitutional. And what I would like to read, the one from Malindi and Butlinden reads, in the present context, we can readily understand that there may be extraordinary circumstances which demands a rapid series of debt intervention measures. These circumstances appear to be covered by the proposed sections. I'm not going to read the section, that might just confuse us, but that is economic circumstances which constitutes a significant exogenous shock that caused widespread job losses or were caused by a regional natural disaster or similar emergent. Given the inherent unpredictability of such circumstances and the appropriate response thereto, the need for speed in crafting such a response, we can readily see that allowing the minister to make such regulations dealing with such debt intervention measures is permissible. Apologies. The other opinion then of Marcus and McConaughey indicates These sections of the bill identify emergency circumstances, exogenous shock and natural disasters, where there is a likely need for the minister to take swift and flexible action to address over-indebtedness. These provisions provide some degree of guidance as to the precise circumstances where these broad legislative powers may be exercised. These provisions could be improved by including definitions to better guide the minister. Nevertheless, these provisions appear to be constitutionally compatible. So I really did the committee a disfavour by saying that there were three council opposing, because the first opposition was to the much broader issue where there could be a general measure. So currently it is, there are support, and the current draft accords with these opinions. That having been said, the concern about whether the whole bill is constitutional, we need to keep in mind that the constitutionality of the bill, firstly, in fact, of most bills, relate to the process that it follows through Parliament. If that process is correct, the bill is constitutional. Currently, the process that this bill has followed is constitutional. So what else could make our bill unconstitutional? Where it affects a right in the Bill of Rights. We have identified those clauses that affect the rights in the Bill of Rights. The one is the issue of our actual debt relief measure and the prescribed measures. We have now also included the issue of the debt, the interest that can be lowered. Those are the only clauses that could be found unconstitutional because they affect a right. The rest of the bill, there is no question of constitutionality because it's consequential amendments, it deals with process, etc. So when we talk about the whole bill being constitutional, and that is why we didn't seek opinion from the council on the whole bill, because the constitutional issues were quite clear, and those are the things that had to be addressed. Now, on the issue of the debt intervention measure, his view is it's not arbitrary, it's a law of general application, therefore it will be constitutional. The issue of the interest rate being reduced, as per my presentation, it's a law of general application, it's not arbitrary. There's a process, there's a reason for it. The prescribed measure, as I've indicated, we have followed the opinion of the two previous opinions that we received. And therefore, I am still of the view that those would be constitutional. I do think that the prescribed measures are superfluous. I don't see the minister ever needing to prescribe, because the measure is there. What he's going to prescribe is going to be exactly the measure that's currently there. And that is why I would suggest that be deleted. The other question that was from Honourable Kachalia was about paragraph 20 of the opinion. There, council poses the question of rehabilitation. I've indicated to the committee whether rehabilitation should be in or not. It's not going to affect the constitutionality of the bill. It is simply that we have reduced our period where a person couldn't apply for credit from about 3 years to 6 months, and a 6 months discretionary. So is it really still necessary? Does it make the bill overly complex? That is a decision for the committee to take. It's really a policy decision. I don't think that there's a legal question one way or the other. The other paragraph 21, is about who places facts before the National Consumer Tribunal. And in fact, paragraph 21 of Council's opinion, and I would actually request that the tribunal and the regulator perhaps confirm to this committee whether they need any operational measures included in this bill, or whether they are satisfied that their normal day-to-day procedures, the rules of the Consumer Tribunal, would be sufficient. Because if it wouldn't be sufficient, then I agree, we must put something in the bill. But from their side, and that is how I understood what they have been presenting to the committee, they even wanted less operational things that are currently in the bill. So if they could perhaps just answer that. Then paragraph 50, the issue of the drafting. I have gone through each of the things that council pointed out, the inconsistencies that he spoke of, the vaguenesses. The one is the operational concerns, where really if there is a need for it to be in the legislation, then we can insert it. But like I say, there was a request for actually there to be less operational issues. The inconsistency is not really an inconsistency. I've even thought of can I draft it in a different way? But the moment I change the way it's drafted, I change the meaning significantly, which is a problem. And unfortunately, we are sitting with an amendment bill. If we think about the, and I know a number of members have not been involved in that specific bill, but I'm sure that there were other bills as well where there were amendments to existing legislation. But the IP Laws Amendment Bill, this committee redrafted because it was so all over the place that you could not make head or tails of the content. And it's not that it was sloppy drafting, it was just, that's the nature of an amendment bill. It is a very difficult bill to work with. So that is a problem. There will be an editing done of this bill. They will be checking to make sure that everything is in order. If things don't make sense, they don't talk to each other, we will correct those things before this bill is introduced. So I'm just going to see where I made a note that I must say something. I've done that one. There was a question about mortgages. The issue of mortgages is not in respect of our debt relief measure, but they do apply to debt review. And the court reducing interest rates, then that is where that would be applicable. So the issue of what will be happening with financial literacy, financial capability training, if there isn't money, we must keep in mind that we drafted our bill in such a way that this bill, once enacted, will not become operational immediately. One of the reasons why we moved away from the date of a cut-off date was that the department indicated to us that they'll need a couple of months to set up the systems. And part of that setting up would be this financial program being developed. We are also aware from Treasury's side that there are, in fact, already programs being developed. So it might even be that there is no funding issue and that it's simply something that can be latched on. But there will be time for this to happen. So there's not going to be an issue. The bill, specifically the last clause, indicates that it only comes into operation on a date set by the President in the Gazette. So that I don't think that will be a problem. I think, Chair, that is everything that was a question.
Sorry, Honourable Kicharia, is that the only hand for the moment?
Just an additional question that I raised. I didn't refer to the particular clauses in the opinion, but they refer to 41, 42 and 43, which was not raised in the presentation of the advocate.
MacPherson?
It's my question again. If literacy is mandatory and there is no funds available for the program, how does someone go through that if the program is not in existence? And how does that affect their ability to go through debt relief? And then I'd specifically ask very direct questions, DDG, what engagement has had with Treasury? How much money is it going to cost in the first year? Is the NCR able to actually drive this? So if you can just answer those direct questions, please.
Very much. I'm just looking around again to see if there are any other clarifications, comments, questions. No. Well, either one of you, and I know some were referred specifically to you, DDG.
Chair, just to answer the question on the paragraphs 41, 42 and 43 about the definitions. And that is exactly one of the things that I've indicated, that these triggers are very difficult to define. And in fact, I do agree with Advocate Trengove in paragraph 41 when he criticizes the definition of a significant exogenous shock. To me, it doesn't mean anything more than significant exogenous shocks, the dictionary definition. There were even things that I was concerned about the way in which that definition was crafted. The issue of the disaster We simply use the disaster act's definition. So in other words, we did not add anything. But these two circumstances have a meaning, a general meaning. If you put the word out there, you Google it, you get a certain specific meaning. And those then are the things that would trigger for the minister to make these regulations. But as I have said, I do not see how either of these triggers will result in regulations of a measure that is different from the measure that we have currently in place. In fact, the regulations, if we retain them, will have to amend them to such an extent that it's only the measure that's in the bill that the minister can prescribe, because that was the original intention. So in effect, we're saying to the minister, when these things happen, you can prescribe something that is the same as what is currently in existence, which makes it superfluous. So it becomes a circle argument. And the only reason why that happened was that we changed the nature of the debt review measure from a once-off measure to something that is permanent. So I would definitely, and the fact of those two terms being so difficult to define would form part of my recommendation for it to be deleted. It is just something that I don't see ever coming up. I don't see how these measures would result in anything that arises for a need, gives rise to a need for the minister to prescribe something additional. Because we can't have the minister prescribe what is there. It does not make sense.
Was there anyone else who wanted to come in just at that point? Oh, DDG?
Thank you, Chair, and for the questions. We do acknowledge that there will be a need for funding for this initiative. And in fact, we've had different engagements. At some point, we presented to the committee our estimations of the amounts that we may need going forward. And even in our budgetary processes now with through Treasury, we are indicating or hinting to the fact that this intervention does need funding. The other thing is that because it's a process, we also don't want to preempt the finalization of the bill before certain things are properly concluded. So we are also assessing the situation in terms of what is the progression of the bill. However, we have noted that we do need to look into the issue of funding, and I agree with what Advocate has said. We do not foresee that the Act will be implemented immediately after it's been enacted. And we foresee that there will be a period that we need to prepare for this process and for the implementation. And engaging bilaterally with Treasury is something that we are also planning to do, but it's something that is also part of this broader process that we don't want to get into at the moment. But it's something that we are looking into. And I would request my colleagues to assist me in terms of their estimations, because we don't want to just come up with numbers. And Chair, we are also prepared to come back with specific numbers in case those responses are not available at the moment. But we did make a presentation to the committee before in terms of the estimates. Because this is a new intervention, we are also working with estimations rather than specific figures, Mr. McPherson. So I think that I will hand over to my colleagues to assist at the moment. Sipamandla, the view.
Wait a minute. Yes, is that Sipamandla? Let me just see, what's your full name?
Chair, mine is just to clarify the issue around the, if it happens that the bill gets to be passed. Normally, before the bill is implemented, there are various options. There are various options. But what is before the committee now is that people have a constitutional right to literacy programs, financial literacy programs, and if the bill is passed, there's an option for certain section to be sort of suspended from implementation. It could be a 12-month period whilst we are waiting the process of negotiations in terms of the issues of funding and all of that. But what I want to believe is that there's a constitutional right for consumers to be entered into a financial literacy program. If the committee, through deliberations, takes that decision, then some recommendations at a later stage can be made when the bill has to be assented to say when do we classify some of the sections in the bill, when will they be implemented? So not everything gets to be implemented when the bill gets to be assented to. So that's what I wanted to clarify. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the clarification. We appreciate it, Mr. Kumkani. Honourable MacPherson?
Mr. Kumkani, with respect, sir, the financial literacy issue is a mandatory part as put down by the bill. So I'm not sure how that's something that can be suspended until it's sort of worked out, if you will, because you could have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe a million people go through the process that receive no financial literacy whatsoever because everyone's still trying to work out how it's operationalized. And Chair, it goes back to my point earlier that I had made. If you want to undermine legislation, I'm not saying you, Mr. Kumkani, but if you want to undermine legislation, do it in a way that is, put legislation on the table that is unimplementable. And if the financial literacy is an issue, DEG, I really think that there needs to be a concretized plan of how this is going to be rolled out. Because I just want to give a prediction, if I may, that this is going to be the one big stumbling block that is going to impede the legislation from proceeding if it is in fact enacted. So I really want you to give this a lot of thought about how is this going to take place, how is the NCR going to actually roll it out. This is something that they probably should have been doing some time ago. Another discussion, but where are they going to get the people to do so, etc., etc.? That's really what I'd like to see, because in the absence of that, for us to say, well, we'll just suspend parts of the Act until we can sort of get it together, is of no help to the people that need, that need the full package of debt relief, which surely has to include financial literacy. So I really would ask you to give that the very serious consideration it deserves, and hopefully some sort of a rollout plan can be presented to the committee.
I just wanted to come in there myself then, Honourable MacPherson, because as this presentation was being made, I was interested in seeing... once again, it was already shared with us by BASA that material had been developed in any event that was available from financial institutions, specifically the banks. And then I saw a certain reference to it yet again about... I'm sorry... And then there was something with the bank CETAs maybe having done certain things. But we may perhaps get some responses on that tomorrow. I'll also ask Mr. Hermans just to check that out. Because I do think that when I look back before we went on the constituency period, there was a broad agreement in the committee, as far as I understood, those are my notes, that we all said how imperative this financial literacy is. All parties agreed on that principle. And yes, you're right. Now, who was going to provide it? At this point, your request is not unreasonable to say, well, is the funding going to be available in this regard, or where will the material come from initially? But we do know that there is material available initially. The Act, as it goes through, we also know that for it to kick in per se, let's just say there's a green light on this and it goes through. Let's just say that. It's assented to. It goes through two houses. It's assented to. You would probably be looking at June or May or I don't know what, next year anyway, for this to be assented to, I imagine, with the NCOP involved. Well, then, once it's assented to, you've got the application. Long before the literacy opens up, you've got this three-month period, as it were. So in one sense, one is saying right now to the National Credit Regulator, to DTI, etc., but also to Treasury, all of them have said there is some material available. BASA in particular has even given us packs of what they've got available. And our criticism of some of the packs, and maybe someone from BASA's even here, I don't know, is that it wasn't entirely accessible, you know, and perhaps we could have had it in other language, languages, etc. That was our comments at the time by various members of the committee. But I think so, the point I want to take of what of your contribution in this regard, Honourable MacPherson, is the issue of where this would be coming from. And I think at DTI you already have some understanding of that. If you could put that together and share it with us tomorrow, we'll see if Mr. Hermans has got anything that has arisen in our own submissions, etc. And then thirdly, I would agree with you, Honourable MacPherson, and perhaps most members in the committee would share that view, that we don't, at this point, want to talk about suspending parts of the Act, you know, because of that. So I would walk carefully there while acknowledging that, yes, that power does remain. So I'm not saying that that power doesn't exist, but we would caution against the easy use of it, as it were, because this committee is had the unfortunate experience of seeing another piece of its legislation unduly delayed. And we don't want to support that at all. We want to see legislation implemented effectively. All right? So, at this point, though, members have, I think, almost exhausted some of, if not themselves, the comments that they may have wanted to make at this particular point, bearing in mind that they do want to go over what you have said today, what we've learned. We are coming back again tomorrow, as you know, to pursue this. But not only this, we're also pursuing the consideration of the study tour report. But I'm a bit surprised on that one. I thought it was going to be the consideration of the National Credit Amendment Report, the study tour.
Yeah, Mrs.
Is it an old? All right. A proposal by Mr. Hermans is yes, this is the program, but we can actually focus only on the consideration of the National Credit Amendment Bill. I'm just looking at everyone in that regard. And let's hear what members have got to say about that. Honorable Khadebe.
Chairperson, I think that, as you said, when we opened the meeting, is that we were given permission to come and sit here in Cape Town because of the bills. Let's stick to that National Land Credit Amendment Bill tomorrow and then deal with it. The other staff will deal with it later. Thank you, Chair.
And self, Honourable McPherson, I know you're rushing out just for some... Oh, is it the bathroom? Well, just allow it to wait. now, I know these things can be quite pressing, but on this issue of, we won't deal with that study to a report. We'll just focus on the National Credit Amendment Bill. You're agreed?
Yes. Chair, I do agree, and you know, hopefully we could also have that discussion about the two questions that I put.
So, at this point in time, as I see it, I'm looking around, and you know when one got that, it was like the guillotine. So, I believe it is time to adjourn. It is time to adjourn until tomorrow, 9 a.m. sharp way. Oh, it's at 10 o'clock tomorrow. 10 o'clock. We will be informed by SMS because...
this venue, each of us.
But the electric... All right, this venue. E249. Yes, Advocate, wait. Advocate Vandermeer.
I do apologize. The reason for requesting the 10 o'clock was if I had to have a draft ready. But I don't have all my instructions. I do have some draft. But I might have taken liberties, and I don't know if that would be in order.
I'll have to look at you, Honourable Kachali, at this point. You heard what Advocate Vandermeer is saying, that she's got a draft, as it were.
But not instructed by the committee.
But we haven't instructed her yet. So the issue is we would want to instruct. So I think if you give us that framework draft, we can instruct you on that. What do you think, Honourable Kachalia?
I think that makes sense. Let's do it at 10 tomorrow.
10 o'clock tomorrow in this venue. Thank you.